Welcome to the Voice of the Force podcast for the Bad Batch. We're back yet again, and my name is Dan, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Noma.
Hello there.
And Ed.
Hello, hello.
How are we doing today, guys?
Yeah, go on.
We're doing. Well, we have the stream today, which will be good.
We're hungry now, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, we're talking about, what was it, Noma? What kind of subs were you talking about?
Vietnamese subs or something.
Vietnamese subs.
Good.
If you know anything about those Vietnamese subs, we'll let you know how to contact us in a moment to talk to us about
those. I've already got my places, so.
There you go. There you go.
Where to get them from.
I have to find some place around me to get them. I've not had them before.
True, true.
But we're not talking about Vietnamese subs today, guys. As cool as that would be, we're talking about the Bad Batch. And Ed, what episode are we talking about today?
Today we are covering the events of the Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 5, The Return. We're going to talk about what happened in this episode, what may happen for the future episodes of the final season of the Bad Batch, and if there were any Easter eggs in here, or just on the nose punch you in the face, hey, remember me? We'll talk about those as well. If we happen to miss anything or there's something you'd like to contribute to the episode, please contact us. There's many ways to do so. Noma's going to give you a few now. We will include these in the show notes and we'll repeat them at the end of the episode for your listening pleasure.
Absolutely. So one of the easiest ways to find us is our website, that is voiceoftheforce.com. We've also got our email, and that is voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. On social media, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. The handle for all three of those is @VoiceForcePod. As always, retweeting and reposting our new episode tweets does help with growing listener base and is very much appreciated. And you can listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. Reviewing us with 5 stars and a comment helps with visibility, and you can subscribe for free for the latest episode as soon as it releases. Now, as always, we're also on Twitch. That is twitch.tv/VoiceForceGaming. We are usually on at least 3 days a week, depending on, you know, scheduling and whatnot. The first of those is Tuesday at 10 p.m. EST. Right now, that is me and a VTuber friend of mine, Roomba Friend. Currently, we are doing a Elden Ring seamless co-op mod, so that's pretty fun. So if you want to see us... be somewhere between middling and mediocre talent Elden Ring players, tune in and watch that, because man oh man, I really need to learn how to dodge again. it's a dichotomy between there's two people, so the boss is breaking up their attacks, and oh god, did I just get greedy? Yes, I did. So you know, still trying to figure that out, but I'm excited. We're real close to me doing my build, which is going to be Twin Blade. I've wanted to test out Twin Blade,
fun build,
single Twin Blade, for quite a long time. So
you mean like two swords, yeah, or two?
Yeah. Sword. No. The double
yeah.
Blade. Yeah.
You in the mod to make it look like a lightsaber?
No, but I am going to, in the vein of I am Darth Maul, fucking
what?
Big ups to Zanny, I'm going to try and get Eleanor's twin blade.
Nice. Yes. That's a good one.
Bloodfire, the Bloodfire Blade incantation.
Absolutely.
And then just shred.
Don't forget Seppuku.
No.
It gives you some extra bonuses.
Yeah, but the weapon art on Eleanor's twin blade, I want to go for that instead, because you do a fucking crazy, like, twin blade style water foul dance. Like, it's
yes,
not the same because it's
yeah,
like an AoE, but you go
ham. It's like a 6-hit,
isn't it? The only thing is just,
so
like...
It's like 8 to 10, I think.
Oh, Jesus, I didn't know it was that long.
Yeah.
Cool. You got Darth Maul up in here.
It's cool. You'll like it. I got that one, and I was just like, yeah.
All you need to do now is mod in Darth Maul's model, and then you can just be Darth Maul with the blood blade.
I'm Akagami no Shanks. No, I'm not switching out of that.
Are you?
yeah, that's what I made my character.
Oh, I gotta look at this, and I gotta see this. I haven't seen any of it yet, so I got to take a look.
Red hair, Shanks, yes.
Yeah. Do you get the scars on the face, too?
Oh, yeah, nice. Everything. It's me as that, and then Roomba made his character look like A2 from Nier Automata. Just two meme kings running around. I was gonna say meme queens, but
two nerds nerding out in a game that is meant for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so on Fridays, then, I usually try and stream my perspective for the Arma group that I'm with. That is the 91st Mobile Reconnaissance Task Force. It's a Star Wars Arma group, so, you know, it's definitely in theme with what we do. But if you're interested in seeing either the tank company perspective of that or Zeus, which is basically controlling the enemies, so that the players can have a good time, then that is every Friday at 6 p.m. EST. Also, always a good time, and the majority of the clips on our Twitch page are from those moments, and I try to get as many good clips as I can. And then on Saturdays, we try to keep it Star Wars, but it is like the variety day. The big thing with Saturday is that's when all three of us are on. So right now we are doing Mountain Blade 2 Bannerlord playthrough, bringing a Mandalorian clan into a fantasy setting, and trying to create our own, you know, de facto Mandalore sector, as it were. But yeah, we're doing that, and it's been a fun time so far. So if you are interested in chatting with us IRL, or, you know, just taking a look and watching how we are when we're playing games and stuff like that, we'd definitely love to have you by. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, lurker or a chatter. You know, just coming by and enjoying the entertainment that we're trying to provide.
The ridiculousness of the stream. Yeah,
exactly. That's what we're aiming for. So, you know, swing by. We've got some free emotes up too, so you can get a couple of those if you... I definitely need to do another version of our pog face, because I've been, like, looking at other ones and being like, you know.
You can do it a little bit better.
Why. Yeah, so, you know, we'll get a version 2 up at some point, but yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. All right, and if you have not listened to this episode, watched it on Disney Plus, I highly recommend go watch the first 4 episodes and then watch this one, and then come back and actually listen to us, because we are going to cover everything this episode. We're going to make sure that nothing is unspoiled, and once we get to the end, we'll discuss it, figure out what might be coming up next, and going from there, let's get over to the credits with Noma.
Ha-ha! Look who's awake.
How'd you sleep?
Better than ever.
Delivery from Shep and Liana.
Another one.
They're happy you're back.
And so are we.
Where's Crosshair?
He wasn't in the ship when we woke up.
He's still adjusting.
I'll check on him.
Absolutely. So yeah, this is Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 5, The Return. It's almost like there's a double entendre there or something. But yeah, the writer is Amanda Rose Munoz, and the director is Nate Villanueva. Now, as always, if I've mispronounced anybody's name, I do apologize for that. But yeah, so this episode starts off... It's interesting because I didn't know where they were at first, but they're on Pabu. So it starts with Omega waking up in her usual spot, you know. I guess the other, you know, the young Jango clones are just on there now somewhere, but we don't see them. So she has a little bit of a catch-up with Wrecker and Hunter, and then learns that Crosshair's kind of just gone off on his own. So she goes to check on him. He is doing target practice with AZI. And missing every shot, and so we can kind of see that his trembling hand is still messing with him. Omega has a little bit of a talk with Crosshair. It's basically the same stuff from before. You know, you've got to talk to them. You've got to, you know, make amends with your brothers. Crosshair kind of is like, yeah, no, I don't want to. I need to be edgy. It's Shadow the Hedgehog time over here. So we get a little bit of that. We get a little bit as well where Hunter and Wrecker are still kind of wary about him. But what ends up happening is Echo comes back, and then the team goes to meet with him. We have a little bit of a talk where Omega is basically explaining what happened in the first 3 episodes. And then she gives Echo Omega's datapad. Sorry, Omega's datapad, sorry. Nala Se's datapad. And basically says there might be more info on this, but it's not working. So the plot for this episode is basically that they needed to get to an Imperial terminal, because that'll bypass the encryption that's on the datapad. So at first, Hunter basically says, okay, me, Crosshair, and Echo will go and hit this Imperial base. You know, Omega and Wrecker will stay behind, and Omega doesn't want that. So eventually, Hunter relents and lets her and, well, basically the full crew go. We do get a kind of a scene that I thought was kind of funny where, as they're packing up to leave, Omega talks with Crosshair and says, "Oh, you don't think I should have, or you don't think I should be coming on the mission either, do you?" And Crosshair goes, "Well, you're experienced, but you are a kid." And Omega points out that she is actually older than the Bad Batch, since she's a, you know, natural aging clone. And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's true. I completely forgot about that." So they head out to the planet. You know, Crosshair was hinting at what the planet was, but it's Barton IV, where, you know, all the shit with him and Mayday and the Imperial officer went down. So they get there and find out that the base isn't just understaffed, like Crosshair had said, it's completely abandoned. So they get there and we get a little bit of a, they do a good job, but it's also a little bit too repetitive, where they keep like cutting to these little sentry posts that get Batcher agitated for a little bit. And like they keep coming back to them and they keep showing it. It's like, so what's going to happen? We're clearly doing this for a reason. By the third time, I was like, okay, at least show me a hint. But they get into the base. They have to power down the little sentry things that they keep cutting back to get full power to the base. While they do, we get a little moment where Crosshair is kind of walking around the base and he finds a pile of phase two clone helmets, you know, all the clones that he served with before he went rogue, and he finds Mayday's helmet specifically. So he kind of like makes a little small memorial for them, to honor them. And Hunter kind of sees it going on and is a little bit curious, but we see that he doesn't ask. However, them turning off the sentry perimeter ends up attracting a not Dune sandworm. It's because it's an ice planet. And it also doesn't have it has facial features, but, and you know, it basically starts rampaging through the base.
I definitely thought that was going to be the same thing from the Mandalorian with the like hippo walrus thing that came out.
Oh, the mud thing?
No, like I think it's the first episode of the Mandalorian season one when he's out on the ice and then the guy speeds off in the speeder.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Remember what that's called. I'll look it up, but I thought that's what it was going to be. And then it comes out as this big worm. I'm like, oh, that's cool.
Well, it looked like a, what do you call them? It looked like a crate, that lesser crate they were talking about before.
From Mando season two.
Mm.
It's definitely, it's interesting to see a little bit of wildlife, because we also get to see some sort of like ice bird, which was kind of neat.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Hunter puts a very fast plan together, which is basically that him and Crosshair are going to go lure the creature outside of the security perimeter, so that when the perimeter beacons come back up, they're not trapped inside with it. While they're doing that, Echo is going to spot, and Wrecker is going to run into the back and reset the fuse breakers, which was a little bit interesting to me, because I was like, if anyone's going to spot, shouldn't it be Crosshair? But then, you know, we've got to get the Hunter and Crosshair working together moment this episode.
Yes, we do. Sense.
Yep.
So they do that. Hunter and his amazing solid snake abilities just immediately falls into a hole, which was, I was like,
yeah, his
like,
abilities did not work very well today.
I was talking shit about it too. The whole time I was just like, oh, you can sense everything on the planet. You can't sense that. But the shit.
I was like, maybe it's the sensors, but I'm like, the sensors are off.
Yeah, no, it was in my head, because like after Ed had mentioned it in our last episode review, I was like, oh yeah, I forgot he had these powers, and he falls through the hole, and I go, I guess the writers forgot it too then.
Yeah,
for a tracker, he did not see that weak ice at all. So it turns into a thing where basically Crosshair and Batcher are like running across the top of the ice, tracking Hunter so they can try and find another weak point to dig out from, and Hunter's just running through the tunnels. Honestly, not too much happens. Basically, like, they find the area, they unveil it. It's very tense the whole time, but as that area opens up, Crosshair, like, lowers his rifle so that Hunter can grab it, pulls him up. Meanwhile, Wrecker has reset all the breakers, so it works perfectly. They reset the sentry beacon. And then, you know, the worm can't get through. Because the main thing this episode is the tension between Crosshair and Hunter. So before the worm attack happens, we do get a thing where Hunter wants to know, like, what happened to Crosshair, why he's back. And he has a very potent line, which is, did you betray the Empire like you betrayed us?
Yeah, that was like, oh boy.
Yeah, and I was like, no, he's got a point. You know, that's a fair thing. I never really thought about it like that, but he did.
Betray us?
Yeah. But yeah, so after the whole thing's finished, he does open up a little bit, or he does admit that he killed an Imperial officer, and that's why he became a prisoner. And he's also got an extremely potent line, which is that he kind of turns on Hunter. This is before the worm shows up, but he turns on Hunter and basically says, you're not angry that I'm back here. You're angry that I am the one who helped Omega escape and it wasn't you.
And after you messed up, essentially.
Yeah, after I warned you with Plan 88 and you ignored me. And it's like, there's some truth bombs coming down. And after the whole thing has wrapped up, we get another shot where they basically, it's a time skip, but we see that they've had to dig their ship out of the ice because the worm made it collapse. And Crosshair kind of comes clean with Hunter and says, you know, I've done a lot of bad things. I did a lot of terrible things while I thought I was doing, you know, I thought I was being a good soldier. And Hunter is like, yeah, I've done some bad things too. You know, we have to just keep moving forward and hope that we can make up for our mistakes. Which for me was, I was like, oh, that's a flag. I recognize what's happening now. So we'll see. It'll be interesting because, like, I don't know about you guys, but as soon as they had that conversation at the end of the episode, I immediately went, cool, Crosshair's dying at the end of this season.
I don't know.
Sacrifice.
I don't think he's going to die. I think, I don't know. There's some interesting things that could happen, yeah.
Him saying, I have a lot of things I need to make amends for, immediately for me, I've seen so many things where someone says that, and then as soon as everyone agrees that they've made up for their bad deeds, they die.
They go off to try and do some crazy thing to make up.
I know what you're talking about. I absolutely know what you're talking about. I hope they don't do that. I don't know.
It feels really poetic. Like, it would be like the perfect wrap-up for his character as he, you know, descends into villainy, realizes what he's done, and then dies a hero. Like, that's like a very
so we were talking about this before, like before he was rescued, like there's gonna be like a one-off, like they're gonna kind of go off each other, and then he's gonna
during season one, that was my whole thing, was it's like, well, considering how he just murdered the Saul Guerrera's men, the only redemption for him now is to then die redeeming himself for Omega or somebody else, right?
Yeah.
And then season two, it like comes back even harder because we now see
they abandon him.
He's disenfranchised, and yeah, he's realizing that he's made a mistake. And then with season three, that would be the full circle, as he comes back into the good graces, you know, gets everybody liking him again, and then, you know, he's gonna end up dying killing Hemlock or something.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? I might be wrong. Nah,
I hope it's not him falling into a fiery explosion. I fucking hate that trope now in Star Wars. I'm like,
when was the last time that happened for
Inquisitor? Grand Inquisitor, I think, was one of them. Okay. I mean, not into a fire explosion, but falling is tech, right?
Yeah, we don't know if he's dead. I still refuse to believe he's dead.
Holding that to like episode 10 when he comes back.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, when they said in this episode, Echo's like, oh yeah, this would have been easy if Tech was here. I was like, that's because he's still on Iriadne.
And they all hung their heads all at the same time.
I was like, that's the thing. They're trying to be like, look, guys, we swear to God, he's dead. And they're just gonna be like, no,
he's not. Yeah. I don't believe you.
I see through your tricks. But you know, I'm still banking on it.
They got the information off that tablet too, like a little bit of information, which is interesting.
It's not enough to say where Tantus is, where it is, or now.
Everybody that's there. But they have a lot of like manifest of like clones coming in.
And that's the thing. Everybody who's there right now, well, not like right now, but they do have a manifest for at that moment how many clones were there.
I don't know if it was that were there or that were coming in, because they said it was a manifest. I'm like, usually that means transportation, like manifest.
You can have a prisoner manifest too, though.
I guess so. That's true.
Right. So yeah, I think it's just it's just one of those things where it's going to be, you know, he can pass this on to Rex now and be like, look how many clones there are.
And you know what?
We definitely need to hit this.
To think about that too, like it was Nala Se's tablet, and that would make a lot of sense because Nala Se dealt with all of the clones and had to do everything for them, like all the sampling and stuff like that. So that would make a lot of sense. That was a prisoner manifest. Absolutely. But
The only other plot thing that we get this episode is that so like very, very small Easter egg that Liana and Shep, you know, the father-daughter duo from Pabu, are still there and like helping out the Bad Batch. And now Omega also explains Emery to the Bad Batch. They know about her now.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's going to get rescued as well.
100%.
She's going to have to get decent. What do you call it?
She was a little bit with Omega being there, though. Like, she was kind of like, she let her have the doll and like stuff like that, where it's like, he was and kind then, of getting a little bit more lenient with it.
And that's going to be it. Is like they've already spread the seeds of redemption for her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I don't think she's going to break out on her own, but I think it's when the Bad Batch does show up and, yeah, when they launch their assault and stuff, she'll end up helping them out.
Exactly.
Emery, how do we turn the thing off? Emery! Oh, we're waiting for the tension. Emery! We need it now! Okay, boom.
No, it's going to be, yeah, it's not even going to be like Emery. It's going to be, Omega's going to yell like, sis, we need your help. And then like, oh, it's going to, like, the bonds of family.
And that's it.
Yeah.
She's going to give her the nickname?
Yeah, just give her a name. Yeah. Well, I thought it was pretty cool. I really enjoyed the part when they were on Barton 4, the Imperial Depot area. It was really interesting to see Crosshair go back to a place where it did not go well for him. Like, he almost died many times in the wilderness, and then he was, you know, court-martialed after that. And, like, the bird thing that was coming down and, like, sweeping over his head, like, that's got to be traumatic in a way, too.
Where it all happened.
Yeah.
Well, I was waiting for him to say something about, like, why do you know this place or whatever? And it's like, well, I was here, and this is where it happened, blah, blah, blah.
He didn't say it was like here. It was, I think Hunter put two and two together after he said he killed an Imperial officer.
He just told him he killed an Imperial officer. He didn't tell him where.
But I mean, like, he saw him put the helmets up and, like, you know, Crosshair wouldn't be a person to normally do that for clone helmets, I don't think. He doesn't share emotion with the crew. Never really did. But seeing that to be, like, adding some moments for him to feel a bit more and actually show that by putting the helmets up in like a shrine type thing, that I felt that when he picked up Mayday's helmet, I'm like, oh my god,
what, because it was Mayday's, right?
Yeah, it was
I
was just like, that sucks, man, that really sucks, because you know where he is. He's either on Tantus or he's dead.
Mayday's dead,
or sorry, not Mayday, the other guys, the other clones that were there. But yeah, man, oh man. Any other last points on this? Any suggestions of what may also happen in the future?
There was something I was expecting to happen, because there's a nice moment too where like Wrecker gives Crosshair's old armor back, and I was like, okay, here we go.
And he fits.
I was like, we're gonna get the armor update. We gotta sell another black figure. Exact same. I was like, oh shit,
exact same.
Eventually,
it's gonna be re-released with the returned.
Yeah, the returned armor, where it's a little bit more scuffed up.
Yeah,
because the thing,
couldn't get rid of it, but we were trashing it about for a bit, so you know,
right? Well, because the thing that surprised me was that, and like it could just be that I haven't seen him in a long time, but like Echo's armor had like the smallest update to it.
Oh, did it? Okay.
The under the chest plate, the like torso armor is white now.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, there we go, we got the thing, you know,
because it has to signify that he's not fully back with them yet.
I think I think it's also like just over time they're gonna have to get new pieces of armor as other armor starts to get like destroyed.
No, so it's the exact same armor. It's just that the torso plate is white now.
Oh, interesting. Okay, okay.
Yeah, and like there's little things with Hunter, like Hunter's just pauldrons and stuff. He's just slowly losing more and more of his armor. I noticed in this episode, his forearm guards are completely gone. Like, it's all just leather wraps now.
Yeah, it's interesting because it gives him a little bit more personality, right?
It definitely gets across the point that, like, you know, things are getting rougher on them. And I think also one of his shoulder pads is gone.
Yeah.
But, you know, the small cynical thing in my brain is just like, look at that, we need new figures. Here's season three.
But I also think it also signifies like them shedding the soldier mentality. You know, like, you know, like you have all the characters of the Bad Batch that are kind of their armor's missing, or there's pieces of it that's still remaining, but not very many. And then you get Crosshair coming back to the Bad Batch after being a soldier for so long. He's still in that kind of little bit of a mentality of like, I'm trying to get my skill back as a sniper, as a soldier, to be useful. Whereas everybody else is like, we're just kind of doing what we can to stay safe and like help other people, right? And it's like they're shedding that soldier mentality and more of a rebellion mentality, or like a, I don't even know how you put it, like a rescue operation crew rather than the Bad Batch, I guess. So yeah, just thought it was interesting. We do get mentioned, of tech, so that's that's there. But any last points, Ed? It was good to see AZ-1. I mean, doing like the sniper thing. He's like, hey, Crosshair, just a heads up, your shooting range accuracy is 53%, which is lower than your normal accuracy, like your average. He's like, yeah, shut up. Like, I don't want to do that. He's got a shake in his hand. Which, by the way, I was going to ask, do you guys think that's a like PTSD thing, or do you think it's part of the chip thing?
Which thing? Sorry.
His hand shaking.
Oh, that's from the torture.
Yeah.
They were fucking doing all kinds of craziness to him to punish Omega for her misadventures.
Yeah.
So she thought she could keep doing them. And
Did they actually do anything to him? It didn't seem like they did.
Since he assassinated.
They were experimenting on him.
Well, experimenting and torturing, it looks like.
Yeah.
Right. Like. There's parts of his face that they've decided not to heal and stuff. So yeah, I think it's just constant invasive procedures and torture.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it could be a combination of like, yes, the trauma of it, whatever pain thing they did to it. He was built to be steady, right? So anything they did to offset that.
Because he's not very useful at this point if he only has 53% accuracy.
I'm calling it now that once Tech returns and like the whole group's back and Tech's not even gonna like question that Crosshair's back, that'll steal his resolve. That'll be his anime flashback moment.
I think there's gonna be a moment where like he has to hit the shot.
It's like, I'm built for that.
That's the moment. Yeah. I think it's like a saving Omega shot or something like that.
Like, at the moment, we'll see as the episodes go on. At the moment, it feels like, because he's kind of the outsider, you know, his skills are degraded and he doesn't really have what it takes. And so it's going to be that, like, the bonds of friendship have healed my mental, anguish.
Because, like, Hunter doesn't hold it against him that he did what he did. Like, everybody's got to do what they got to do to survive.
Not anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean, though. And so, like, that stress and that pressure off of his crew member is off, and there's an understanding there. And I think, slowly but surely, having that bond reestablished, like you said, is gonna definitely help him. That's all I got.
Yeah, sounds about.
Ed, do you have anything?
Sounds about right.
No, that was pretty much it. I enjoyed the episode.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It definitely had some emotion to it.
It was just funny when he's just like, "I know a place that's remote and everything." I was just like,
Yeah.
I wondered, then I saw the ice, and I was just like, yep. Okay.
That's as soon as I thought. I was like, oh no, not back there.
But the thing that got me was like, they keep the sensors, and I was like, wasn't the sensors just to tell them when the raiders are around? But the raiders are gone. And then the worm.
And it started shaking the ground, yeah.
It was like, okay, I see now.
Multi-purpose.
Yeah, exactly.
The one thing I will also say, because I noticed it as they were getting to the base, was, man, oh man, the money and effort that they put into Frozen really fucking paid off this episode, because the snow animation was so fucking good. It was super on point.
With the footprints in the snow and stuff, and like the movement of the snow?
Breaking, shooting it.
Yeah.
The breaking, the way it was reacting to everything. Like the footprints in the snow, yes, but like watching. There's this crazy thing where if you go and watch it, you can literally see their feet going into the snow and then like slightly disturbing it as it comes out.
Yeah.
So it's like if you're ever curious, they do have a video on how they went over like all the reference material and then the animation in Frozen for the snow stuff. With that, I did notice as well that there was one animation shortcut that they took in the episode, but I don't blame them for it because it is horrendously difficult, and that half the reason they did it in Frozen was just to prove that they could. And that is that if you watch the episode again, every single time anyone digs through the snow in that episode, you cannot see their hands. They very purposefully avoid.
It's like digging, and then like it's like a back. Big hole. Yeah,
yeah,
because the digging doesn't make sense. We're just like, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, wee! It's just like that's not snow.
and specifically, it's because then you have to go in and animate. Like they, I know they have the technology because they did it in Frozen, but you have to make sure every single finger is making the correct grooves and they're interacting with it correctly, and the particles coming out.
A lot more work.
It's 10 times the effort.
If you can send me the link to that Frozen video, I was trying to find it, but I couldn't. Like the animation snow stuff. If you send it to me, I'll put it in the episode description for people so they can watch it. I remember watching it. It's a very interesting video.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. But yeah, I'll try and find that. But
I don't know if you guys also noticed in the first episode, like first three episodes, when their like shuttle came down and crashed on Tantus, and then the shuttle came down and crashed on the other planet that Omega and Crosshair were at, they purposefully put it behind or like in a forest or behind a mountain range or something, so you didn't have to show like the ship going through the dust and dirt and stuff like that and carving its way through. You just see like the dirt and dust like flying up past those.
Because it's
a lot more work.
It's exactly, it's 10 times the effort, and not only is it 10 times the effort, it's 10 times the chance that someone's going to watch the scene and notice something was off.
Yes. And you just want to eliminate as much of that as possible.
You also get, you use the less money, less time, but you get the same thing, right? If you put it behind a mountain, the dust going up, like your brain fills in the rest, right?
And that's the thing. The only people who are going to notice are people like me. And again, I'm like, it's a TV show. I'm not going to be like, how dare they not show
it? And honestly, most of the time in the Bad Batch, we've been like, damn, this is like the rain off of the Marauder and stuff like that. And like it flying through these, like, it just looks so good. And the lighting and the shading and everything.
That's kind of like a lateral area, because in that case, you're just putting effects down and you're making sure that the, oh my God, what do they call it? The render engine. I can't remember, but like the Arnold or similar equivalent for like the render mats are just going to look good.
The
thing that takes the longest there is the actual render time for the scenes
and what you're rendering it on and how.
I mean, and again, it's because I was in college when Frozen came out, but the reference that I always come back to for that is if you ever watch Let It Go again, at the very end, they zoom out and they do a full render 360 shot of the entire ice castle she's built. Every single frame of that shot took 39 hours to render.
Oh my God.
Yeah. There are 24 frames in a second. It's like a 5.5 second full render. I did some of those in not to that same level, but in college is brutal, because you literally would be like, okay, let's render, I'll come back in 7 hours, shit, frame 37 didn't render properly,
and now you got
let's run it back.
You got the AMD thread rippers that are like 128 core processors just to do stuff like that now.
Why Disney has entire render farms, right, of just like in
highest end computers that can render.
It's not even the computer, like it's honestly like from what the setups are, it's just the graphics and RAM, and then you just like spool those all together through like super advanced RAID processors, and you just have the whole thing run.
That's
insane. It's crazy. But
I would love to see those places. It'd just be like the heat walking into that room would be insane.
The Disney again. This was like the hearsay, because I don't know for certain, but people were saying back then that the Disney ones were all like liquid nitrogen cooled.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Otherwise it's like 300 degree. There's a whole. I don't want to go too far off, but
melting
like
computer parts.
Well, just animation and heat in general. If you go back and watch the original Disney, like I'm talking the hand painted on glass frames stuff. From the original stuff, it was like apparently it was 70 degrees Celsius in those rooms, because in order for it to show up properly, you need to have seven gigantic floodlights that are on time. And this is like the 50s and 60s, so like that's the tech level, and you have 17 panes of glass that are lined up, and each of them have one character, one part of the layout, of like all the props and and then you take that picture, and then you spend 2.5 hours either moving or replacing the frames, and you do it all again.
So you basically create the same picture with the character moved like the character's just moving on this pane the next pane is like the character's next to it, and you just keep on swapping the panes.
No, it's even worse than that, because what it is for the characters is you have to then line up where the characters were and then replace it properly. But then on the layouts, on the layouts, it's like, okay, so the foreground moves at 1/8 of an inch.
Oh, because the foregrounds move too. And I forgot about that. Yeah.
But how many layers of the foregrounds are there? Because all the layers in the foregrounds move at different amounts and smaller amounts.
Oh,
and
then
you've got
God.
The midground, and you've got the background.
It's
you've
insane.
Got the then you've got front effects, because the effects weren't done on the same layer as the characters, and all of it's hand painted, and you use it for one shot and then it's gone.
That's awful.
And it's how you did animation.
A lot of sand took L's those years for the class.
It's interesting. But so now seeing that come into the present, and like, granted, we're saving a lot of time, but it is why I'm going, like, because when Hunter and Crosshair are digging through the snow, when Wrecker's digging through the snow, even Batcher, you see Batcher's paws moving, but they're not in the snow. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine. Because again, it's only people like me who are going to be like, oh, look, they saved money. And it's like,
I definitely noticed something. I was like, they don't want to show that. It's definitely harder to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think that does it for this episode, guys. Let's get into the outro. Welcome to the outro of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you guys have anything you want to say about the podcast or about the episode we covered or about animation in general, you have questions about animation that you want to ask Noma or Ed or I, we don't have that much knowledge, but we could try to answer it. Yeah, exactly. You could always ask us questions. You can always send us comments or queries as well. And Ed will let you know how to do that.
Absolutely. You can find all this information over at voiceoftheforce.com. You can also find it on the show notes of this episode. If you want to contact us by email, we are voiceoftheforce@gmail.com. On social media, we are on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads. We are @voiceforcepod. Retweeting and reposting our new episode tweets does help growing our listener base, and we really appreciate that. We are also on Twitch. We are twitch.tv/voiceforcegaming. We stream Tuesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays EST. Daylight saving times is coming up, I think, tonight. So those times may be a bit.
We get
off.
1 hour less, guys.
Woo. 1 hour more.
No, it's less. We move forward 1 hour.
No, spring forward, fall back.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah. We're losing now. Yeah. I'm so convinced you're gaining 1 hour.
No. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm so sad now.
Just as soon as it hits midnight tonight, it's immediately going to be 1 a.m.
It goes midnight 1:03 at this point now, because we would lose 2 at the fuck, man.
Yeah,
go to bed
anyway,
early.
Keep an eye on our Twitch and Instagram for the times that we will be recording, just to see that maybe it might be an hour difference or so from where you are, but keep an eye on those. And finally, listen, rate, review, follow, and subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and all major podcast platforms. Reviewing us 5 stars and a comment helps the visibility. And as well, when you subscribe, which is for free, you will get the latest episode as soon as it releases.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. And remember, the Bad Batch is almost back together. All we need is tech to walk from the sunset towards the ship. That's it.
It'll happen.
It will be there. We don't know what episode, but it's going to happen.
But we'll know it when we know it.
If we know it, we'll see it. And the animation will be beautiful, I guarantee it.